Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Tech Ed for day three. I imagine there's probably a few hangovers in the morning this morning. How did the party go last night for everybody? Everyone get to go on the go-karts, or did you do what I did and accidentally walk in the front door and have a beer straight up and go, damn it, I just wanted to go on these damn go-karts, and the beer was right there. So, and look, thanks for coming along to my session. JavaScript with a view. I like to think of this as a little bit of a controversial session. I like to think that I'm going to make some statements that will have people in the room going, that's not how we do it, and that's not the way that I would think about that. And basically, there's a couple of slides in here that I really am just starting an outright fight. So, and I actually presented this topic in New Zealand, and it did just that, and we had quite a few heated discussions after my talk. So I'm hoping that happens again today. And so, look, just before I get started, I'll introduce myself. My name is Jordan, and you can get me on Twitter there at JackAdge. And I'm a solution architect at a company I run called Xamling. And my email address and everything like that's there as well. So it's all the boring stuff out of the road. But just before I get into the content today, I just want to say that this is a level 300 session that could have been maybe graded as a 400. So I'm actually going to talk about a lot of concepts today, but I'm not going to drill into a lot of things. So it's more, I want you guys to really take away ideas more so than actual, you know, technical concepts. But anything that I do present that, you know, is fairly technical, I'll certainly point you towards documentation so you can go away and look it up later as well. Now, at Xamling, we do a lot of consumer-focused technology, and I seem to start every talk the same way. But basically, we do consumer-focused applications. And by consumer-focused applications, what I mean is that they're applications that people want to use, as opposed to applications that people don't want to use, or also known as enterprise-focused applications. So, we do a lot of mobile application development. We do sort of the Windows Phone thing, and we do Silverlight Desktop. We do WPF. We've done some Surface stuff. We've done some Xbox development. So we've sort of got this broad range of areas that we've covered off. But most recently, we've actually been moving into HTML-based development, and so we're targeting a lot of the mobile platforms in HTML. So we're sort of building the one app across device, so you know, we target the iPhone and the Android and the BlackBerry and all those devices with a very similar code base. And I want to share with you guys today how we go about achieving that, and also how we go about actually making a packaged, making a packaged HTML-based app that runs on a device. And so, even though the concepts, I sort of am going to be leaning towards a mobile-focused app, I'm only going to be demonstrating in the browser on the desktop, and all the concepts that I'm going to be presenting will actually also work in a desktop environment. So, sort of HTML-based apps in general, as opposed to HTML-based websites, which sort of, you know, have different pages and everything like that. These are more contained, packaged apps. And it certainly has been interesting over the last probably 6 months or a year or so since HTML5 was sort of given the brand name, I guess. Sort of like a marketing push to call HTML5 and then have CSS3 and all that all packaged up into one. Guys, there's a couple of seats down here if you'd like. People can bunch up and stuff, so you know, don't stand up. It's a 75-minute session. And so, I mean, it is certainly an attractive proposition to have this single application working on many devices. A lot of my clients, you know, they might be working on, like an iPhone version, an iPad version, Android and WinPhone and everything like that. And all of a sudden, they've sort of engaged a heap of different agencies. It's fairly rare to see an organization to have iOS or Android or Java capability in-house. So it's very attractive for these organizations, especially considering they might be able to engage one partner, or they might actually have skills in-house. Even if they don't initially develop the application, they certainly will be able to maintain it, which is very, very attractive. And it's also, obviously, you know, one app, multiple devices, especially the HTML5 thing and the mobile device platforms that you get. I think last count, with one code base, you get basically six devices. You get the iPhone, iPad, Android, and Android Honeycomb tablets. You get BlackBerry and the BlackBerry Playbook and everything like that with just one flat code base targeting the WebKit browser. People often say to me, you know, well, how do you deal with all the different screen sizes on the Android or whatever? So, well, turns out HTML's actually been doing a pretty good job of that for quite a few years. So it's actually a really good system to work in on multiple screen sizes. The interesting thing too is, and a lot of people don't realise this, is that you can actually take a HTML-based app and package it up and actually build a proper app from it and deploy it to a device or put it up in the various app stores and marketplaces. There's a free download out there called PhoneGap, and what it does is basically installs project templates into like Xcode, which is the Mac OSS development platform. And it goes in and you create a new PhoneGap project, drag in your HTML files and press build, and it just bombs it straight onto your device as an actual app, and you can configure the launch screen and the icons and everything like that. So it's really good. There is still some more seats down the front, guys, if you want, bunch up. The other interesting thing, too, is that when you actually build an app correctly, that the hardware has become so good and so smooth and the transitions are great that a lot of people don't even realize they're using a HTML-based app. A lot of time we go in and you know, we're doing pre-sales or something like that, we'll demonstrate something running on either, you know, like on tablet or on a phone. And they're like, that's really good. How is it that it can work on all these different devices? And I'm like, well, it's written in HTML. And then they fall out of their chair. They're just not used to seeing apps built in this way that look like native apps and feel like native apps and have the performance of a native app. I mentioned before that I think that the HTML5 thing is more of a brand thing than an actual technology. I mean, I know it is definitely a technology, but the whole HTML5 badge and then putting CSS3 and JavaScript underneath it, I really think that's a great marketing push, especially for me when I'm doing the pre-sales thing. Because people come up to me and go, oh, we've heard about HTML5. It's like, we haven't heard about, they don't come up to me and go, oh, we've heard about super fast JavaScript engines and all the great features in CSS3. They just badge it all into one thing as HTML5. And so people say to us, oh, can you build a HTML5 app? I'm like, yeah, but I don't think that we'll be doing much HTML5 in it. So it's sort of this funny thing, but we don't tell them that. We just say, yeah, you're getting HTML5. and of course, you know, I don't want to detract from HTML5 itself. It has some great things in it. I just don't think that a lot of the time when people ask for HTML5-based app, that's what they really want. Sure, you get all the offline stuff and some other great things that are really good for mobile applications, but you know, they're sort of asking more, I think, about the performance and things like that. As I said, I really think that the current rise, other than the marketing push, is behind the CSS3 and JavaScript are really the pushes behind it. You know, fantastic hardware acceleration, really, really fast JavaScript engines. If you go back a few years and were shown a JavaScript engine that runs on a mobile device today, then it would be probably equally as fast as something that's running on a desktop browser at the time. So it's just simply an incredible progress, and it really opens up JavaScript as a platform on mobile devices. Whereas before, you know, it's not a compiled language. It's very dynamic, so there's a lot of processing grunt required at runtime to actually run JavaScript. But they've done so much work on it in the various engines out there that it's just become simply an amazing thing. So today is pretty much it. I mean, it's definitely a JavaScript talk. We're going to be talking about high-level patterns, though. And so we're going to start off, and we're going to cover a bit of we're going to sort of look at some MVVM, and we're going to look at a little bit of Knockout.js. But I'm not. This isn't a Knockout talk. We'll run through Knockout, but I'm going to more show you a couple of things just so you get the idea and then point you towards the documentation, but then show you some broader level concepts that I overlay on top for the apps that I actually go out and build. That's an interesting statement. I mean, before I was at Xamarin, I was a consultant, and so got to travel around a lot of organizations and do, you know, a lot of training and coaching in various areas, including JavaScript. And I find JavaScript is this very interesting language. The differences in knowledge in JavaScript around the place is quite staggering. Not simply because some people know it better than others, and some people, you know, over here are really good, and some people here, you know, might not have a great crowd. Not actually you guys, but it's interesting because I think that everybody who's even laid their hands on JavaScript thinks they're amazing at it. I mean, this is this language that people, you know, you get in there and you get a bit of jQuery going or something like that, and all of a sudden, you know, you move something around the screen, that's it, you've just nailed JavaScript. And that's not to judge the people doing that. I think that it just can be tend to be perceived as a bit of a, you know, a simple language or something like that. And certainly, I have a lot of people who are like, you know, we're going to do some JavaScript training. The developer's sitting in the corner. I don't want to do JavaScript training. I know all about it. But then you start showing some interesting concepts, and they're sort of like, wow, this is actually pretty interesting. I didn't know you could do all this stuff. There is a couple of seats down here still, guys, if you want them. And so it can be perceived as a little bit of a toy language. It can be seen as the language that you go and pick out a piece of HTML and run a pretty animation on it. But, I mean, that's really not the case with JavaScript, especially now that we're getting into these more advanced client-side applications that are using sort of web services instead of pre-generated HTML off the server. So, you know, JavaScript is a functional, dynamic language. It is simply amazing. It's incredibly powerful. It really is probably one of the most flexible languages, excuse me, on the planet. It's interesting because with JavaScript, there's so many ways to achieve the same goal. There's so many ways to skin a cat. You can sort of, you know, you can load an element in that way and do that, and you can attach classes and functions and things to all these different objects, and just all of a sudden, you know, it's funny seeing the same implementation done by two different people. It will probably come out fairly different, which is a great strength. But I think, you know, if it's not managed properly in the wild, through the use of patterns and things like that, and just a general lack of, you know, when you sit down and learn JavaScript, a lot of people don't often sort of go through and, you know, do the JavaScript 101. It sort of just evolves as something that you do, that you start off just to get that, you know, that value in a text box or to move that animation around, and it evolves from there, and all of a sudden you find yourself, someone's going, hey, you're a JavaScript guy, can you, you know, like, write this advanced application? And it's going to be interesting to see when that happens in the next sort of 12 months, where people go, you know, I think that I need to really rethink the way that I'm doing my JavaScript code. Okay. So this is the fight slide. So I do have a lot of content to get through. So I'd normally say, you know, can we leave questions to the end? But I might ask this time if people could lay off coming up here to, you know, give me a jab in the kidneys or whatever until the end. Now jQuery. Don't get me wrong. Now I'm just going to preface this slide with, I use jQuery in every single project and I absolutely love it. But I think that it makes it really, really easy to fall into bad coding practices in JavaScript. And it's not just jQuery's problem. I think that it's actually JavaScript in general causes this problem, in that people, all of a sudden, they might be fantastic C# coders over here and doing all the great patterns and everything like that. Jump across into the client or into JavaScript code, and all of a sudden all those software design and development patterns that they've used for many years all just seem to go out the window. It's really funny to see. You know, I sit down with people and I go, if this was C#, would you do that like that? Like, I mean, you wouldn't have that piece of code laid out like that. And I don't see any patterns here. It's really interesting. And then they're like, you know what, you're right. I don't even know why I didn't do that. It just seemed to, you know, the JavaScript just seemed to spew out on the page and it works. So, you know, leading back to that, and it's sort of leading back to that, you know, A, not using patterns, and B, it seems to evolve somehow. I don't even know. It's a funny beast. But here's the argument. Here's the fight. I think that anytime you do $, you know, some element, this is jQuery, for those of you who don't know, this is called a selector. So basically, $ is a jQuery object. I'm going to pass in a selector, which is basically like a CSS selector that says to me, I'm going to get a node there called sumNode with an ID of sumNode, and then I'm trying to put a click function onto it. And I think that that's actually, I reckon that's a bad idea to ever do that. Now, that's sort of what jQuery was built for, right? It's this, the big part of jQuery, especially when it first came out, was the fact that it had this amazing selector, this selector ability. Now, I'm not saying that selectors are bad, and I'm not saying that you should never do that, but I'm saying you should probably never do that. But you can do it, but only in the right way, and I certainly still have that, a lot of that sort of code in mind. What I'm more talking about is that if I'm doing something click equals function, then all of a sudden my code has a direct relationship to my view, my HTML view. Now, normally in development, that's actually not allowed. Like, if I was to walk into a project, like in Silverlight or another view-based technology, and I saw that happening, I mean, and or a lot of you in here saw that happening, you'd probably go, hey, you know, you shouldn't really have an intimate knowledge of your view. That gets even worse because in JavaScript and HTML, this is a really, really dynamic system. You can have different JavaScript matching up to different HTML and everything like that. And if you're writing your JavaScript code that, to know about the view, then you know, you lose a lot of this dynamic ability, and you're certainly getting away from reuse, and you're creating complexities, and you're going to write this, you know, horribly unmaintainable code. I'm just going to do the announcement again. Guys, you can come in. There's some seats. There's a couple of seats down here, and there's also some room on the floor down here if you want that. Failing that, yeah, put your hand up. You've got a spare seat next to you. Thanks, Shane. You're a pro. Also, failing that, you're most welcome to come up here and join me on stage. We'll do a jig. So, and I'm not just talking about the click function because, you know, we've got this functioning code that we're trying to put onto an object. I'm also talking about things like animate. Now, that's another really interesting thing because people are like, but that's all I do with jQuery is animate stuff around the screen. It's... Now, I'm not saying you're not allowed to animate things. I'm not saying that you're not allowed to do all this sort of stuff. In fact, it's a great idea. It makes your applications look really good. But I think there's better ways to do that. And this is basically what we're going to be looking at today. So that's the real fight. I think that any selector is bad in jQuery. So hold off until the end. Let me explain. I'm not going to just dump that on you guys and then just walk away merry and, you know, not even explain my reasoning or anything like that. This is what the talk's about, is showing you how to get around a lot of the bad design practices. I think that just jumping and using that sort of stuff gets causes. And so that's just one little example of the things that I see going wrong in JavaScript development in general. Okay, so what do we do about it? So we should set some goals first. Now, our first goal... I mean, these are pretty obvious goals for any software development project, but they always seem to be left out when we're talking about some JavaScript stuff. So, I mean, obviously, let's make it really easy for developers to learn your code base. Self-documenting code, the ability to go and have a look at how someone else did it and copy and paste it, the ability to add new things to your code really, really easily, rather than, you know, adding, if you want to add a new view or something to this advanced application, it's going to take sort of 50 minutes just to figure out where to put it and how to navigate to it. And, you know, I need to figure out how to go back and do all this sort of thing that's fairly common in these applications. It should just be able to go, you know, file new, dump in something, and it should just work. That's what I think anyway. So it's certainly about self-documenting code and also using common patterns that they understand. There's nothing worse than sort of trying to interview a developer and going... So let's talk about patterns. So have you heard about the Jordan way of doing, you know, loading a view or blah, blah, blah? It's certainly easy just to go, have you heard of MVVM? So that's what I mean about patterns. It's something that's pre-established and pre-known, or you can go and look it up on a blog, and that's why it's important. Doing it your own way is never a good idea. Obviously, secondly there, we want to simplify our code and reduce our markup. So we want to write applications that have as little HTML, as little CSS, and as little JavaScript as possible to get the job done. This is always the case in any application, but it is especially the case in a mobile application where size is everything. Now, sure, it's all preloaded in device, but the more, you know, the more elements you're loading and the more JavaScript you're trying to process and everything like that, the more processor load is going to go onto the tiny little processor in that device. And so it's very, very important to consider these things. In the mobile area. Whoops. So leading on from that, we want to aim to have our code and our design or our HTML markup nicely separated. It makes it so easy to work on one piece of, you know, to work on the view, the HTML, and the code separately. at the moment, my team's working on a project, and normally I'd be the guy that goes in and creates all the JavaScript side of thing and everything like that. But I had to start a project, but I'm up here at TechEd. What they can actually do is, we've actually predefined a list of things that we're going to, a list of names, a naming convention that we're going to call every object in our system. Well, not every object, but just the objects that that sort of have a relationship between the view and the view model. And so they're actually down there right at the moment building out screens. They're actually binding to fake data and building out all these screens. And basically, I'm going to get back to a list, to a whole heap of empty, you know, views that show up on the screen but don't do anything. And I can just go in there and start banging in the code when we're ready to go. And they can also define a set of states as well and switch between those states during their development. And so by state, I mean, you know, imagine you've got a button at the top that folds out a shopping cart. The two states there are cart collapsed and cart expanded. And so you click cart expand, it goes to the cart expanded state. They need to do, you know, whatever animation or anything like that to get that to pop out, but they can do that without me writing any code, just all in CSS. So, and I think that one of the this is especially true of JavaScript, is that you want to get away from any JS-isms. Now, by JS-ism, I don't mean that great feeling you get when you're doing JS. What I'm talking about is that, you know, JavaScript left unmanaged, as I was saying before, can cause bad development practices and people can fall into traps. So we actually want to build out our framework and the base code and I guess the architecture and everything, so then people don't fall into those traps. They have something to follow that prevents it. And I think, you know, whilst that is true, once again, of any software development, especially important JavaScript, especially important when you've got great developers coming on who really understand code and understand how applications work but haven't done a lot of JavaScript, to stop them from falling, to hitting the common pitfalls. And that's what our frameworks and patterns should try and do. So the way this comes out the other side, we sort of set some goals. The way this comes out the other side when you're actually thinking about implementation and you know, what to do next is, firstly, we want to start with separation of concerns. Now, I'm a big fan of MVVM, the model view view model pattern, which we'll look at today. And so separation of concerns, whilst it does apply to a lot of software in general, I think it especially applies to separating your view from your code. And we'll have a look at why I think that's important today. And I can certainly talk about that point for a very long time. I think it's hugely important in anything that you build. We're also going to move more towards declarative markup. Now, remember I was saying that your code shouldn't know about your view, but it's okay for your view to have some knowledge of your code. Now, it's just the way that the pattern works. So I think that a view sort of does have a view model that goes along with it. But a view model doesn't necessarily have to have a view that goes along with it, and so it shouldn't know about... The code should never know about the HTML, but the HTML can know about some of the code. What that leads to, though, is declarative markup. So the HTML is allowed to know that there's a function somewhere that when I click this button, it has to call that function. Now, the function might be called login. So I can actually have probably two login buttons, or who says that there has to be a button that actually has that login click? Who says that it can't be an image? Or who says that I might not want to change that at a later point? So you can see why the view can know about the code, but if I all of a sudden change that to be an image or add another login button, I have to go and change a piece of code to actually make that happen if I'm doing it the other way around. So, I mean, and that's just a simple example, but there's so many different ways around that. Also, by declarative markup, we're going to look at some data binding, especially two-way data binding and observing value changes, so then any values that you change in your code will automatically propagate out and show up on the screen. And that includes also observable collections and things like that we'll look at today. We're also going to move on pretty quickly from the whole MVVM knockout JS thing. Two reasons. MVVM is extremely well documented, as is knockout. So knockoutjs.com. And I'm certainly going to introduce it to you for you guys who haven't used it before. But it's not, as I said, going to be a big portion of my talk. We're going to use it throughout the talk, but I'm not going to concentrate on this is exactly how you do it. It's more about concepts. So another one of these concepts that I think is far more important to get across today is the stuff that I guess we've got knockout and we've started to use it and we're building projects, but I think that it's, you know, we ran into some other issues as we actually try and introduce, you know, I don't know if we did a talk yesterday on parallel workflows and things like that. And when we tried to bring that across into the HTML world, we noticed actually quite a few shortcomings that we weren't used to after developing using Silverlight and Expression Blend for Windows Phone style projects. And one of those was state management. Now, basically, there's a couple of things in state management. First of all, I think that all states should be predefined in your application. And remember, by state, I don't mean like some sort of code, you know, state machine or something like that. What I mean is something expanded or not, or is the login viewed, or is a dialog up, or, you know, that sort of state. And I think that we actually should do that as part of our naming convention as well. So when we're saying we're going to build the login screen, you know, we should be able to define the states that screen has with it, that live with it. So if I haven't done the login view model yet, they can still go and build the login screen. The other thing, though, that's interesting about states is that if you actually, a lot of the time you're writing code that says if button clicked, show, do some animation, that state is then lost. You've done the animation, you might have an is expanded or something like that variable to then, you know, go and track that. But I think that having an official predefined state management system in your applications is extremely important. The other thing too is that if I go and add a new state, say for example I've got login expanded, login collapsed and login halfway or something, I can add the login halfway state. The view doesn't have to implement it yet, but I can still switch to it, and then at a later point they can then go and just, you know, very easily put in that state. And vice versa, they can actually put in a state that I haven't done yet. And we're also not inventing states in code. So somehow our code gets to this other state that we haven't even really thought about yet, and it's not defined, and then sort of what we do with it, and it's really hard for someone who hasn't been working on your code to go through and figure out what the states are and how they work and everything like that. And of course, going back to pattern management and developer management, you know, someone, if there's 47 different ways to do a state that then runs an animation or something like that in your application, you know, it's going to get very, very messy. The other thing too is that when we switch between states and using the power of CSS3, we can actually do state transitions and animations that are all handled by CSS. Another portion of the separation. So you've got your code, your view or your markup, which is what displays on screen, and then obviously your CSS as well, which is what styles everything on the screen. It's not only styles it, but it animates it and transitions between style states as well, which is hugely important. So we're going to look at that today, and that's actually forms one of the, I guess, broader topics that I really hope you guys get something out of today. Lastly, we're going to look at view selection. So mobile applications are, well, okay, advanced web applications with a lean towards mobile applications. They generally sort of don't have multiple server calls or multiple pages downloading markup and extra code from the server. They're normally just sort of pretty much one page that then, you know, someone clicks a button and it needs to navigate to another view. Now, that view isn't actually another page. It's actually just another piece of HTML that gets dynamically placed on the screen. So we need a system to, first of all, make it easy for me to add a view and a piece of code and a view model that lives with it. Secondly, it has to be really easy to get to that view and view model pair. So by example, I mean, I want to show the login screen. I need to, first of all, in my code, would I go, okay, I'm going to create a new instance of the login screen view. It's like, no, because the code should know nothing about the view. So I don't know that there's a login screen view. What I do know, though, is that there's a login screen view model. So what I'm actually going to do today is sort of flip things around a bit from the standard navigation practice. And instead of actually navigating to a view and then, you know, trying to figure out what that view is and then apply a view model to it, what we're actually going to do is I'm going to create an instance of a login view model and I'm going to navigate to that. Then, through convention and other practices, the navigation frame or the navigation system in my application will actually go and look up the template, generate it, and automatically apply it for me. So it can become very, very easy to actually do all this navigation back and forward, You can imagine then that to navigate back to a previous view, I just put all the view models into an array, and when I want to go back to the previous one, I just pop it off the end of the array or the queue, and then just run it through the same navigation process. It can automatically select the view. All the values are still the same. It was kept in memory, and it'll just pop up on the screen exactly the same. The other thing too is not only making navigation and adding views and everything like that easy, but it's also centrally managing and automating transitions between those views. So especially mobile apps, users want it to be pretty and slide around and do all that sort of junk. And so if I click login, I might want it to slide off to the left and show the login screen. When I click back, slide back. And all that should be centrally managed. So when I add a new view and then navigate to it, that automatically happens. It automatically gets history. The back button automatically works and everything like that. And the transitions, once again, should be managed via states using CSS. So we'll have a look at that too. Okay, so MVVM. Who in the room's done a bit of MVVM before? That just keeps getting better every single year, which is really great because I think it's a fantastic pattern. And it's sort of been a bit of a shame that it's been, I guess, seen as the Silverlight WPF pattern a lot of the time, especially in Microsoft technology circles. But it's been really great over the last year to see some frameworks and tools and things become available to actually bring it across to the web world. And put quite simply, first of all, if we weren't for HTML, we wouldn't be able to do mobile app dev except for Windows Phone 7 because we're Silverlight and web people. But secondly, I don't think that we'd actually have the capability to do the apps that we build without patterns like MVVM. We just couldn't get through it. The apps start getting big and unruly. We're a small team. We need every single efficiency we can get or else we can't compete. So it's patterns like this that I find really change the way we do work. So MVVM. It all starts off with declarative two-way data binding. Now, by that I mean I create an observable object in my view model, say I call it name. So I'm going to create an object called name in my view model. I'm then going to create some HTML, and then I'm going to data bind to that value, that name value. It might be a text box that I create. So by two-way data binding, I mean that when I change the text box, it automatically pops it back into that variable. So if I update the variable over here in code, it will send it out to the view. But if I change it in the view, it will automatically send it back. So if I've got a form where I'm filling out a whole heap of data, and I click OK or whatever, I don't have to go back and then in the OK function handler in my code go, I've got to iterate through all these text boxes and try and figure out what they were and everything like that. The variables that I created, first name, last name, everything like that, will just be populated. There's no other code to write. So it's pretty cool. And that's one of the most important things is actually managing how the data gets from your code into your view. And by using declarative data binding, so you declare it in your markup where to get the data from, it really simplifies things. So as I said, it observes changes to data, both from the view and from the view model, through observable objects. And we'll have a look at what those are as well today. The other thing that MVVM is really good with is working with templates. So part of what I'll be showing you guys today is, remember I said I want to reduce the amount of HTML code I'm writing. So we're actually going to look at how to use client templates. So basically, the ability to take a piece of data, iterate through, say, an array and actually write an object out into the screen, but using templates instead of, just straight out HTML that then we replace things into. So the templates, basically, we use data binding and they're reusable and everything like that. And they're just a fantastic way and a very powerful tool. You can do templating without Knockout and things like that using jQuery templates. And in fact, Knockout uses jQuery templates. But when you actually pair them up with Knockout and jQuery templates, it's got a special template part, and it's just really, really powerful and fantastic fun to use. So, as I said, Knockout.js is what we'll be looking at today. I'm going to show the URL again at the end, because I really am going to blast through it. It's not a Knockout talk, as I said, so it's more to give you guys an idea and then go and look at the documentation and figure it out for yourselves how to do that. Okay, so I'm done with the boring bits, the talking bits now, so let's move on to some code stuff. Okay. All right. So basically, first of all, if you want to install Knockout, have you guys got NuGet? Have you guys been using NuGet? Yep, sweet. Okay, if you haven't, nuget.codeplex.org, is it? Yeah, org. I don't know, it's Codeplex. Basically, you can go in here and you can type in Knockout, and it'll find it. So it's all available in NuGet for a start, which is a great help. And it's always updated. I think the latest version is 1.2.1 or whatever. Now, the good thing about Knockout is, NuGet, is that if I install Knockout, it says, it's got a dependency on jQuery and jQuery templates and all this stuff. So it'll automatically download those as well for you and just basically set your project up ready to go. So what is the latest version there? It's been upgraded. I'm using an old one. Look at that, the 30th of the 8th. So that's pretty cool. So you can see it's an active project as well. And I've got no idea what's in the new version. I'm sure it's awesome. It's probably all different now, so this talk's, just throw it out. So basically what I'm going to do here is I'm just going to demonstrate, this is like Knockout 101. So first of all, we have to actually go and create a new view model. So sorry, I've got this introduction page, and I've already included your Knockouts and your jQuery, and me pointing at my screen here is of no help to anybody. So I've got Knockout and all that sort of stuff. And I've got a few other things as well that I'm actually going to talk to you guys about. Remember I was talking about making nice patterns so then developers can follow and everything like that. So what I've already created the intro view model. It's just a JavaScript file. But you might notice there's a piece of something a little bit interesting. If you've done a bit of JavaScript development before, you'll note that actually isn't standard the way to create a class in JavaScript. So that's interesting because for those of you who've done a lot of JavaScript, you realize that there is no way to create a class in JavaScript because it's not a classical language. It's a prototypal based language. The first stumbling block for people who haven't done a lot of JavaScript development before is figuring out what the crap a prototypal functional dynamic language is. And so what I've actually done is I'm using a system here called HJS Classes, which is a jQuery plugin. You can see it's dollar dot, which means it's probably jQuery. And unless you're really being a-hole to your fellow developers and switch out the dollar object with your own lovely implementation of it. But basically, dollar class or create. Now, what that is it's a system to help people think about JavaScript and more of a classical style language. So this dollar class here, it supports things like inheritance and interfaces and things like that. I don't use any of that stuff because I think that if you're going to do inheritance and things, you're probably better off doing it in the more classical, the more existing JavaScript way. But what I think is very, very important about this particular thing here is that it's got this initialize function. And that's always called whenever I new up this object, which is something which is generally a little bit more difficult to do in JavaScript. You can certainly do it. You can use all sorts of closures and things and self-executing functions and stuff inside your other classes to get things to initialize. But this is just far easier. So now what someone can do is they can just go and say, how do I create a new class? Oh, that's right. And what I do is I put into my projects, and this is to help me and others, is I put in this blank class. So I just say, copy this and paste it into your new view models or whatever else you're creating, and then just rename it. So now I can go something equals new, var my view model equals new intro view model, bracket. Anything I put in initialize is automatically run. And I think that's a very, very important first step for getting used to the platform. Okay, so I'm just going to save this because for some reason everything's locked. I must have not removed source control bindings or something. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm actually going to create a new variable here called this.name equals Jordan. Okay. Yep. Okay, so you can see first of all, we've got this dot and everything like that. So it's quite a neat way to work. There's very few problems with scoping. In fact, I try and protect my developers away from JavaScript scope. Not a scoping talk, but if you haven't done JavaScript scoping, I really strongly recommend you look it up because you can absolutely cluster your projects if you don't understand scoping in JavaScript. The essential premise with scoping is that It's not a given that this is this, which is probably interesting to a lot of developers, but look, if you don't understand scoping, then look it up, as I said. But we can actually get around it and protect developers from it, so it's not always the biggest problem in the world. So first of all, I've got this.name equals Jordan. So I've got this new intro view model. I've got my home page here, but I have to actually now, I guess, bootstrap Knockout. So what I do is basically at the start of a project when Knockout needs to initialize, I say, I'm going to create a new view model, I'm going to initialize Knockout, pass in the view model, and an area of the page that view model then applies to. So maybe it might be a main div or an element or something like that. So basically, I'm actually going to copy this code because I just, every time I type anything on stage, stuff happens. You know how demos go bad at TechEd all the time? Has anyone ever seen a blue screen on Windows 7, like on a fairly modern laptop with up-to-date drivers? Because I never have, except during my last TechEd talk. So it was quite amazing. It was right at the end. It was okay. So and then the guy down the back tells me that this room's been cursed and they've had the most amazing demo fails. And I'm like, dude. True story. Okay, so what I've got here, and that's not going to work at all. You guys were just sitting back waiting for me to try and run that, weren't you? Okay, so first of all, look, there's one of those dollar things. That'll be the last we see of that for this entire show. So basically, yeah, I'm just going in and going, when the document's ready to go, I'm creating a new intro view model. So just like a class there. And then I'm basically going knockout, KO dot, which is your knockout bits, KO dot apply bindings, take the intro VM and apply it to mainframe. And you can see down the bottom there's the mainframe. So at the moment, we've got that mainframe, and there's not a lot in it, obviously. But what I can actually do is I can go in and I can start trying to pull some things out of my view model. So I might start with a div, and let me go for this data bind equals. Okay. So data dash, HTML5 tag, data dash anything, data dash Jordan, data dash dog, data dash beer. Basically, it's supported in older browsers, but in HTML5 it's ignored and won't cause a validation issue. In this case, Knockout's got its own data dash bind, which is quite handy. Now, data dash bind, what we can put in here is a whole heap of different things that Knockout supports. We can point it to text, value, we can point it to click, we can point it to CSS, so we can say, depending on what this value is, apply this CSS. We can do all sorts of things. We can even write our own custom binding extensions, which we'll have a look at as well today. So first of all, I can just go text colon name there, because remember we had that variable in our intro view model called name, this.name. Okay, here we go. Let's run that. So I'm just going to go view in browser, and then Jordan shows up on the screen. That's really small. I don't even know how to make that bigger in here. Okay, Jordan's on the screen anyway, in the blue bit there. And so that was okay, but it wasn't really, I guess, observable or anything like that. I've just written out Jordan in there, and it's not really the most fantastic example. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go this.date equals ko.observable. Okay. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a new function here. It's going to be called update.date.nit. Okay, and then I'm going to just make sure that update date runs. And the idea here is what I want to do is I want to update the date every second. Okay, this dot. Okay, so in here, first of all, I'm going to go var dollar this equals this. Nice little JSism there. I'll get to why I'm doing that in a minute. But first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go set timeout, and then I'm going to pass in a function, and I'm going to go, okay. And I want it to do it every 1 second because that's pretty cool. All right, so what I want to do in here is I want to just go and update the KO observable, the date variable, with the current date. Now, this is really cool because I can just write code. I just know that I need to expose the current date. I'm not worried about the viewer or how that's getting bound to or anything like that. So what I can actually do is I can go dollar this dot date new date. So that's how you in JavaScript you get out the current date. And then I might just go dollar this dot update date. Okay. Like such. And I'll save that, and then I'll go in here and I'll change this text to go from name to date. I think that's what I called it. Yep, date. Okay, so basically now, if I start shutting Safari every single time I do a demo, someone shoot me, please. Here we go. All right, so, who does tech ed talks at 8:15 in the morning on advanced JavaScript? Crying out loud. Okay, so basically you can see there that I just wrote a piece of code that ticks over every second, but it's updating that observable and it's automatically coming through the data binding into my view. Now that is pretty cool, and that is really something that's been, I think, lacking in JavaScript, the ability to do these sort of view management and things like that. But that's a pretty simple example again. But it's still a lot of fun. Okay. All right. I just want to quickly also demonstrate two-way data binding. So let's go new observable there. Okay. So I've got your name. I'm going to add a new function here, and it's going to be called like display name or something like that. Okay. There we go. I'm just going to alert this dot your name like such. Okay. So basically, I want to collect a name from the user and display it in an alert. That's the code done. I have no knowledge of where that's going to be entered. It could be in a text box. It could be in something else. So let's go text box. I've been doing too much Silverlight lately. Input data-bind. And this time we're going to go value because text boxes have value, not text. So we're going to go value, your name. And then what I'm also going to do is I'm going to put in a button. I'm going to go data-bind. I'm going to go this time, I'm going to touch click, colon, and whatever I call that thing there, display name. Okay, and I'm going to go show name. Okay, two things here. So I think you guys are following what's going on with the value there. It's going to obviously come out from the... Yes? Sorry? Oh, thank you very much. You get a chocolate. Your name. Okay, what's interesting here is that, first of all, I'm data binding this touch click. Now, Knockout has an inbuilt click function. So I can go click colon display name, and we'll actually, when I click it in the browser, it will go and do it. Touch click is actually an extension I wrote. It does a couple of things, and this is why extensions are great. Firstly, on a mobile device, using click will actually, I don't know if you've ever used a mobile site on your iPhone or anything. The first time you click it, it seems to highlight it. The second time it clicks. That's because the click is designed to do that in a mobile Safari browser or in other browsers as well. With touch click here, I'm actually detecting if it's a mobile site or a browser site, and actually using the proper built-in touch mechanisms in a mobile touchscreen thing to do the click the first time. It also does another thing. It actually rescopes the function call to my view model as opposed to the HTML element that I called it from. Remember I was talking about scoping before? The very, very basic premise of scoping in JavaScript is that whatever's before the dot will be the scope that's get passed into the function call. So if I go intro view model dot display name, the scope, this, is going to be the intro view model. But if I go button dot display name, or button dot click, sorry, which is pointing towards display name, the scope actually going to be the button, not the variable that I thought it would be. So what I'm doing is I'm actually hiding away that problem. And most of the people that I work with on this code don't even know that that would have been an issue in traditional JavaScript development. So it's very rare that they need to rescope any calls manually using $.proxy or anything like that. So let's just run this. I told you guys, if I keep shutting Safari, it's going to slow us down. Okay, so I'm going to go show my name, Jordan. Okay. By the time I clicked the button and that function rang and it alerted the your name variable, it had already been repopulated. So you can see what I mean, that I don't have to do any extra work to actually get this information back and forward and everything like that. It really simplifies code and everything like that. These sessions are being recorded, so I'll just open up now. No, I'll tell you what. I showed my blog link, but for some reason I can't log into it for like the last 6 months. So that's why I'm not posting. That's what I'm telling everybody. What I'm going to do is I'm actually, look, I'm I'll figure that out and I'll put something on my blog. You get the URL at the end of it. And I'm going to put up this and also the state manager. So the touch click and I'll put up the whole project. But if you want it, come and see me after. So I can email this project to anyone who wants it, although not all of you. There's quite a few in here. Or come up with memory keys and things like that so I can infect them with viruses.
Does the knockout keep observing every single keyboard clicking?
No. So it won't do it every time. It does it when it leaves it. I don't know if you can change that. Someone will know. You can change that? No. Too hungover to care? Awesome. Okay. So, I mean, that's pretty much the intro to Knockout. I just want to show a couple of more basic concepts before we go into the more overview stuff. Probably should take the time. Beautiful. What time did we start? 4:15. All right, I better hurry up. Okay, so basically, that's the basic bit there. All right, let's... So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually switch into the main application. So what I've built is a bit of a store. It's a shopping store that basically has a set of items and things like that, and we want to add some extra bits. What I've done is I've actually already written the code, and I'm just going to jump in here and have a look at that. We go to model, view model. Okay. Now, you can see here I've got some shopping cart view models. You can do view models and things like that. You can do all sorts of wonderful stuff. But what I've actually done is I've already actually gone up to my service and actually called down a list of the shopping cart items, but I just haven't showed them on the screen yet. And so what I actually want to do is I want to go, first of all, this time I want to go this dot, what are we going to call it, store items, equals ko.observableArray. Okay, so this time it's an observable array, so obviously I can add multiple objects to it. The beauty is when I add and remove objects to it, if they're linked up to a template, it will automatically add and remove those elements from the screen as well. Just better overwrite that guy there. And then I need to go $this.storeItems.push SIVM, which is my shopping cart item view model. Okay, so basically I'm getting an object from my server and pushing it into an array. So I'm just going to go back in here. Now what I've actually got is I've actually written this store item template. You can see it's got a view detail, it's data binding to the item.title, it's doing all that stuff that we looked at before. It's got a couple of buttons like add to cart, and it's got some images and things like that. Basically though, this is a template, and what I need to do is I need to call into that guy somehow. So what I've got here, I'm just going to go down and copy out this thing, seems I've been typing a few interesting bits today. Okay, there it is there. Okay, so basically, what I've got here is I'm actually, instead of data binding directly to the values, I'm actually going to data bind into a template. So I'm saying, please load me the home store item template, which is that guy down there. You can notice the script with a type of text HTML. And I'm going to go through for each store items. You saw me create the store items observable array. So that means when I add and remove items to that array, it's actually going to automatically add and remove this template with the items inside that data binded to each of the store items automatically. So I'm just going to go in here and go to index. Okay, so basically, should have probably shown that before it so you knew what I changed, but I've actually added those objects there, those the actual items in the store. Okay, so that is a quick lap around Knockout. Where to put my clicker? There it is. Okay, so as I said earlier, modern web apps have one single page. They don't often have, you know, you don't often have the ability to, you know, go back to the server and get some more data. They run offline and everything like that. So they really have one page. So we need to do some interesting stuff around view selection. And you know, I've already spoken to that. So as I said, we need to be able to A, easily add a new view and view model, and B, also make it easy to navigate to them and transition between them and everything like that. A view basically displays something from a view model, so not only do we need a way to navigate to them, we need a way to pair them up, to select a view, to select a view model and somehow get to it. I think that... as I said, and this is sort of an interesting concept, is that we don't navigate to the view. It's quite normal in web development to navigate to a view. You navigate to a HTML page. We navigate in this, inside our app, to a natural view model instead, and then have it select the view through convention. Okay, so demonstrate pictures speak louder than words, or whatever they say. Okay. So what I'm actually going to do is I need a way to log into my app. I've got a login button, but at the moment it's just saying to do add login. So, you know, the guys that developed the view here could have done that for me already. They've added the login button. I can go in and add the login code without a dependency on me. So let's go in and actually add the login view model. So I'm just going to go down here into my view models. I've got this login folder here. It's going to go add a new item. JScript file, I'm going to call it login view model. Login view model. Okay. So I've got login view model there. Remember, I've got this blank class that I showed you guys before. I'm just going to paste that in. Login view model. Okay, we're going to go this.username equals ko.observable. This.password equals ko.observable. Now, interestingly, what I'm actually going to do here is I'm actually going to pass in something called the frame, and we'll have a look at what that is in a minute. So basically, the frame is my navigation frame. Most view models will need access to it so they can navigate to other view models and so they can navigate back. So I'll have a look at how I'm going to navigate to here in a minute, but I'm actually just going to add another function here on undo login. Function. Okay, and then I'm just going to go this.frame.navigate back, like such. So you can see the frame seems to have some sort of navigation ability. We'll have a look at what that is in two shakes. All right, I've got to add a template for the login view. I'm just going to copy that once again. It's so just another script with a type of text/HTML. Okay, so login view template. But this time I'm actually not going to reference it directly from any other piece of code because I actually want to navigate to this guy as a full screen. It's not like the template we saw before that was shown in line inside another template. This guy is actually going to take over the full screen. So I've got the login view template. I have to just do one little thing, and this is so dirty and I hate it. That's bad because I now have an intricate knowledge from my code of the way the views work. Unfortunately, I can't get around it in this case because I can't use convention to look up the name of that because it's all hidden away by the dollar class thing. So if you're doing straight out JavaScript, I could reflect on myself and figure out my own variable name to figure out what template I should be using. But unfortunately, in this case, I can't do that. So this is the only little dirty little secret that I have about my code. And you could, yes. Yeah, you could pass it into the constructor, but at some point something has to know what it is, so it's better it knows what its template is than like the home view model having to know, because there could be 5 view models that call this login thing, so I want to make sure that I don't have to have that piece of knowledge in too many different areas. So I try and keep it simple. But yeah, you certainly could if that was a problem, if you wanted to have different view models or something like that. So that login view template, I've got the template, I've created the template. So I'll go back to my home view model, and I've got this on show login here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go login view model equals new login view model. And just before I forget, I'm just going to add that to the index page here. I'm just going to drag that guy on. Keep using the wrong thing. There we go. Login view model. So I'm in my home view model here. And what I can actually do is you'll notice this guy has got a frame as well. So I need to pass in the frame. We remember that. And then I can just go this.frame.navigate to LVM. So I'll talk to the frame in a minute. Refresh that guy now. So when I log in now, you can see that there's a transition. That took me literally a minute on stage, so it's a lot quicker to do this in your bedrooms at home at your mum's place. And so you can see how easy it is to get something like a login screen going. I'm even collecting the data from it and getting ready to click back and call back. The login button here, it doesn't actually log in, it just goes back. And you can see I've left it up there so you can see that there's actually the templating system that I've built, the navigation frame, actually has the ability to show two items at once so they can transition next to each other without disappearing first. Also, if I'm only transitioning one screen, I actually cache the old screen so it doesn't have to reload. So if you've got scrolling or something like that, it automatically is back there. It's a pity this isn't like a, you know, like a 180-minute talk, because I'd really like to pull apart the navigation system. But for now, all you have to know is that it's just another view model. So I've got this thing somewhere, model, don't know, frame, navigation frame. It really is just another view model, and basically what it's got is in the HTML I've got two areas, and it's very much like Silverlight. I've got an old content presenter and a new content presenter. They're actually data bound to the frame's old and new content. So basically, the navigation frame also knows how to load up one of those view models and find a template for it. So using Knockout, I can actually don't have to hard code the template name that we saw before. We can pick that up from code. There are examples on knockoutjs.com on how to do all that sort of thing. But basically, yeah, when I navigate to something, it pops the existing view model into an array, and then navigates to the new one, and then when I navigate back, it pops it out of that array and everything like that. I really wish I had time to go through that piece of code with you, but remember, this is a conceptual talk. If you want the code, you can come and see me. I just don't have time today, I'm afraid. But I will show you the actual template down here that I was talking about. Old and new. Template is template name. There's no quotes around that, which means that it's going to try and look for a template name method. And I pass in a piece of data. So instead of going for each like we did with the template before, this one here is just data, which means it gets one object. So you can see there, template name and the view model, and it automatically goes and selects which template to view from the view model itself. So that's how we do that pairing. And I feel horrible for just blasting through that, but it's more about a concept. And as I said, you can come up and grab this code off me once I'm finished. So sorry about that, guys. It was especially hard at Tech Ed New Zealand because they were 60-minute talks, so I had to like cut a whole heap out. So you guys are lucky. You're special. Yeah.
If all of that is hidden away,
so how do they make it without the code? Yeah, so I can actually just grab that and just run it. So I could just put that in a page. Yep. Normally I wouldn't do that to them. I'd actually go through and create a series of view models and also have some sample data there. So I use repository patterns and things like that to be able to switch out repositories at runtime between sample data repositories and real repositories. I usually get them most of the IA data structure done before we start, but technically you could, and they quite often do that if I haven't got something ready for them. My team's been sending me through some static links today, just showing me some screens that they've built on our new app. So that's navigation, view selection, and navigation. The concept there, I think, the most important concept is that I was able to very quickly add a view model and a template, and then just called a single well-known central method that not only showed it on the screen, but did the transition as well. That's the most important concept. That's something that you, even if you don't use that particular same code that I did, that's the concept that you guys really, really need to be thinking about. Okay, moving right along. So, view states. Now, this is something that I'm very happy to say that I might have invented it. No, I'm just kidding. Basically, though, we haven't seen a lot of view state management and things like that in HTML. Very well known in Silverlight world, and I certainly did not invent it at all. I just really like it, so I wished I had have invented it. As I was saying before, it's very common for JavaScript code to directly manipulate the HTML to do animations and move things around and everything like that. And remember we said that's probably not such a great idea. So I'm going to create a rule and then follow it somehow. I'm going to say that states need to be maintainable and well known. The states should all be controlled from the view model because it is the code. It is what has application state. But they should be implemented in the view. So it's the HTML that knows that if the shopping cart's expanded, what to do with that. It should be shown an expanded shopping cart. But it's up to the code to actually choose whether or not the shopping cart should be expanded, because it's probably been a button click or something like that. So basically, Also, in parallel workflows, yeah. States are 100% paramount. They have to be known on both sides to the design and the code, and that way they can fold that shopping cart out without having to know about it beforehand. Okay. So, visual states. Done right. Back in the login view model, what I'm actually going to do is I'm actually going to define a state. So I've got this new thing that I've written somewhere here. There it goes. Okay. And it's this state, visual state group. Very familiar if you're from a Silverlight background. Basically what I'm doing is I'm defining, I'm saying this dot some state group is going to have a normal state and an other state. So there's two states. It could be login, it could be anything else like that. The trick is I can now switch between those two known states without caring, you know, giving a hoot what the view does with it. So what I might do is I might just add in here, you know, on make red or something like that. And this demo changes every time I do it. Okay, on make red. And then what I might do is I might do this dot is red equals false. And I'm going to go in here, I'm just going to switch that boolean. I might normally go, you know, this dot is red equals something, blah, blah, blah. What I might do though is instead, I might just go this dot some state group dot go to state. Sorry, I do need to switch that boolean. This dot is red equals not. This dot is red. Is red. Okay. Isn't it awesome when people type things on stage and talk to themselves while they're doing it? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I've been doing too much KO. Thank you very much, guys. Well spotted. Dot go to state, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to go is red, this dot is red, colon, and I'm going to go other state. It should be called red state, but anyway. Then if it's not red, then I'm going to go to normal state. Okay. Yep. Thank you. Other one. Thank you. Surprises all around. Thanks, guys. Okay, it's just impossible to spot things like that when you're coding on stage. Absolutely, I don't know, something's wrong in my head. Should never admit that. So basically, I've done the state switch now, and that's it. Like, I've got this well-known defined state that I can then go between. But now we need to have a look at how to implement that. And I've got only a couple of minutes to do it in. Remember how I promised there'd be questions at the end? I flat out lied. Okay, so I'm going to go to my login view thingy. I did paste it up here. Okay, so what I'm actually going to do is I'm just going to put another div in here. I'm going to give it a class equals some area. Yep, that'll do. And then I'm just going to put in here my name, so I love seeing it. So I've got this some area there. It's going to show up on the screen. But what I'm actually going to do the state, to implement the state, is actually go into the scripts. The styles. That's a good one. Site CSS. Okay, so we've got what do I call that class? Some area. So I've got make writable. Okay, dot some area. And what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna go background is color green. Have you seen that in the ReSharper 6 it underlines all your HTML colours with the actual colour? It's pretty sweet. I love it. So I've got background colour. What I actually need to do as well, though, is I need to go into... Sorry, I've got too much junk open. I need to add something on this guy here. It's data-bind state. This is another extension that I wrote. Now, what that's doing is it's saying that any states that it finds on my view model, something state group, a convention, goes through and looks for that state group on the end of a variable. It actually goes and it applies that state group to that area. So you can have state groups in state groups, and you can do all sorts of binding and things to make sure that the outer states don't mix up the inner states and stuff like that. Inner state. So basically, yeah, it's an extension. What I've done is the null there, basically I can pass in another view model to get the states off as well. Although I've never had to do that. I don't even know why I did that. Now, so we also need to put in a button. So I'm just going to grab the undo login there, and I'm going to go back to my login view model, and I'm just going to switch that to onMakeRed. On make red. So I've got this sum area. It should be green at the moment. If we go to the login view model there, it should be green. Beautiful. doesn't do anything yet, so there's nothing. But what I might do is I might just go back into my CSS, into here, and I'm actually going to go dot, what do I call the other state? Other state. Dot some area. And go background dash color colon red. Okay. So basically you can see the state switch has just added a CSS class. It's not an amazing concept. This is something that's very well known and done a lot. But basically the state does all this built in. So first of all, we've predefined the states. We've got an easy way to switch to them. I can go and write that class, that CSS, without having to actually without having to sort of have the code ready. I can actually do a state switch just without the view. And then if I go in here and run this guy and go here and log in, it doesn't work for whatever reason. Did I not see that? Okay. I'll just have a quick look at this. I am running out of time. I would love to answer some questions. So I must have made a mistake somewhere. Oh, look. I'm not going to sit up here. I'm obviously having spotted something, but essentially that would switch to the red thing. And if you really have to have proof that that works, I'll get it working for you after it. So, look, I really do have to wrap up, and I'm sorry. I know it's a packed session, and I had to rush through a lot of different things. Oh, actually, I will show you just a working state very quickly. I've got this cart down the bottom here, and if I click that guy, it'll actually flop out, and I can see the cart. So I can actually go in here and go add Skype and LinkedIn and things to the cart, flick it up. It's actually grabbed the same view model that I added to the first observable array and then passed them into the cart view model and added them to that observable array. But also, the cart expanded is just a CSS class with a CSS transition that says fly up to this height when you're expanded and stay down at that height when you're not. So there, told you it works. Okay, so I did promise that I'd put those links up again just before we finish up. Knockout.js, check it out. View model first, navigation. Automate template selection. Make sure that you don't have to do extra work to find all that stuff. Essentially, manage transitions are very important as well, making sure developers can add things to your project without having to figure out how to do all the other junk that some designer's done. And also easy history management, back and forward navigation, things like that. And state management, what we just talked about and demonstrated, I think is a hugely important thing as well. And the state manager code that I wrote there is about 40 lines long. It is so simple to do. And it's very, very good. It's good fun. So look, I literally have 3 minutes for questions, but I'm going to say thank you very much for having me. And if you've got any questions, maybe we can approach the, unless there's anything really important. But first of all, clap before everyone leaves. Thank you very much. We have time for one question. Oh, yeah. There we are. Yes?
You're using Safari
as a demo. It works in everything. The reason why I'm using Safari is to support CSS transitions for the state stuff. Yeah, so it works in everything. Yeah, everything except for the transition.